The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member at tntradio.live. From climate change to energy and environmental matters, you're listening to Unleashed with Mark Morano on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome to Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. All right. The International Eczema Council is investigating, drum roll please, how climate change may impact eczema. All right. Good night, folks. I've had enough. That's it. Throw in the towel. All right. This is a journal reference actually published in a peer-reviewed journal. The impact of climate change on atopic dermatitis, a review by the International Energy Council. Let's take a look at some of these findings. This is just in the wacky news department. The research found mixed outcomes, but here's what they found. Droughts were linked to dermatitis through indirect effects like food insecurity and psychological stress. The effect of precipitation was found to be complex and region-specific. Wildfires are increasingly common due to climate change and were found to exacerbate dermatitis. So there you have it. Extreme weather causes worse dermatitis, skin rash. But the problem is, on every metric, hurricanes, floods, tornadoes, wildfires, droughts, there's either no trend or declining trends on 30, 50, 100-year timescales in the peer-reviewed literature, even acknowledged by the UN, even acknowledged by the National Climate Assessment, authored by Greenpeace activist scientists. So just another example of how the medical community has been completely corrupted. Update on some of yesterday's stories about the alternative food, the mold, and other things. The UK Telegraph is reporting that Welsh farmers are fearing an eco-land grab as the net zero agenda is crushing their meat production and their farming. A post-Brexit master plan means farms must sacrifice 20% of their land to trees and wildlife, and the farmers fear extinction. 20% of their land has to be set aside arbitrarily because EU bureaucrats say, hey, to meet net zero, you got to do it. And in the EU bureaucrats' mind, that's good because the trees will capture the carbon and they'll have less food production, which will mean less emissions, and that'll be good for the climate. Of course, there'll be less food, and food will go up, and they'll be rationing food. And one last one, the UK Telegraph, not making this up. Ants pack a punch of flavor. It's one thing to get us to eat crickets, cockroaches, and mealworms, but ants? Come on, they're tiny. What is it, like a seasoning? Are you like powder, like salt? Well, here's what they say. The flavor of ants add caramel and nutty flavors to dishes. Pause. Say scientists, unquote. Badoop bang. Say if scientists say it. Unless you're a scientist, you can't even contradict it. Trust the science. Are you ready for this? Black ants, which are very common, have a sour, vinegary taste. So I can't imagine how many ants you would need to even fill up on, or how much powder an ant would make compared to something like a cricket or even mealworms, which just seem denser and meatier. I don't know what to say. I mean, this is the world upon which we live, and it's nuts. And I'll have this tomorrow, but other breaking news is Donald Trump, of course, running for re-election. According to Dr. Robert Malone, Donald Trump is still not acknowledging the damage done by Operation Warp Speed, by the emergency use authorization, and the later, not under Donald Trump, very clear on that, the vaccine mandates coming from the Biden administration, coming from all the Democratic states, coming from industry, coming from to the U.S. government employees, et cetera. But I just wanted to go back. This is important. In her 2022 memoir, Donald Trump's COVID coordinator chief, Deborah Birx, boasted about how she manipulated and misled Trump into implementing lockdowns in the United States, specifically 10 days to flatten the curve and the COVID emergency measures. Once he caught her deception, Trump turned on Birx, which was good, but he still hasn't cleaned up enough of his history there. He needs to come clean on this. Remember, he said that Andrew Cuomo in New York did better than Ron DeSantis. He made it for cheap political points, but it was an outrageous thing to say. Media loved it. Andrew Cuomo came out and praised Trump for saying it. Of course, DeSantis did the best of any governor by far. March 9th and 10th, this is Deborah Birx writing in a biography. Her and Fauci, we work simultaneously to develop the flatten the curve guidance I hope to present to the Vice President Pence, who's rotten to the core on COVID and everything related to COVID, getting buy-in on the simple mitigation measures every American could take. For the rest of the week, our task force meetings, I slipped in oblique references to future recommendations. I'd present a graph that read, encourage your employees to, followed by suggestions of how to keep the workplace safe. Knowing the objections to flatten the curve. Remember, this was to shut the government and the economy down just for 10 days to flatten the curve. Just who couldn't do 2 weeks? We're all in this together, right? We decided to take these on directly. We told our story, notice he's calling it a story, that the sooner they adopted and stuck with these measures, meaning the Trump administration and the government, the sooner businesses could fully reopen. In other words, in order to get to a freedom, you've got to do tyranny hard and early and fast, and then you can be free. Until then, sorry, you can't be free. The presence of the word regulation and guidance would immediately have ended our shutdown efforts. The guidance would never have made it past the White House gatekeepers. We constantly emphasize we were making recommendations. So she goes on and says, on Saturday, March 14th, Fauci and I joined this meeting to position ourselves to block the president's escape routes. This was all designed to brainwash as a psyop to Donald Trump to make it look like the only option was to lock down, lock down, lock down. That's all that we can say. So they arrived at 15 days to flatten the curve. We relied on the CDC's estimates of the virus transition cycles. And she goes on April, no sooner had we convinced the Trump administration to implement our version of two-week shutdown that I was trying to figure out how to extend it. 15 days to slow the spread was a start, but I knew it would be just that. I don't have the numbers in front of me to make the case for extending it longer, but I had 2 weeks to get them. So they literally did it. You can watch the photo of her and Fauci smiling at each other as Trump's announcing this 2 weeks to flatten the curve. They were already on the next 2 weeks, and of course it went on for months and months. I felt the blood drain from my face, and I shivered slightly. I didn't know what precisely had brought about his change of heart or who'd convinced him I was wrong. She's talking about when Trump finally turned against her. He said, we'll never shut down the country again. Never. He finally made that statement on April 3rd. But of course, we were already in the shutdown. So we're going to have Dr. Robert Malone, some really powerful comments on that tomorrow, talking about what President Trump is a problem now. And I think Trump needs to clean this up before the election. I'm rooting for Trump. I just need him to clean this up. So on this topic of pandemics, my first clip is Bill Gates. And he's telling everyone that the pandemic it costs to get ready for the next pandemic. Remember, he's the one that recommended if you want to do it right, do what Australia did. By the second most tyrannical response next to China in terms of a pandemic response. They had the track and trace. They had the helicopters on beaches evacuating people. They had people in quarantine camps. So the next pandemic is a rounding error compared to how we can solve climate change. So he's comparing climate and COVID, essentially, and he's saying climate's much worse, and he's telling you how to deal with both. This is clip one, Bill Gates. And the clip is coming, I'm told. Clip one.
Is the threat of the next pandemic as urgent now as the threat from climate change?
Well, they're very different. You know, climate change just gets worse every year as long as you continue emissions. A pandemic, we're likely to go a fair period of time without either a naturally or intentionally caused pandemic. But when it does strike, you know, we saw it's tens of millions of lives and tens of trillions of dollars. Fortunately, the cost to be ready for the next pandemic is a rounding error compared to what it takes to retool the modern economy solve climate change.
First of all, let's just be clear. Putting more money into pandemic, stopping a pandemic is foolhardy. The idea that we can retool the modern economy through great expense to solve climate change is like witchcraft. We're going to redo the entire economy and we're going to solve climate change. First of all, there is no climate change to solve, you effing moron. And second of all, retooling the economy is going to cause massive problems and disruption and be completely insane and empower the very people who are going to crush our freedom and our economic prosperity, i.e. Bill Gates, World Economic Forum, United Nations, World Health Organization. It's insane. Now, you may ask, why does Bill Gates get all this positive coverage? Because he effing pays for it. He gives out hundreds of millions of dollars to all the major media outlets. They're on his payroll. That's why you will never see even one hostile question asked of Bill Gates. All right. But Bill Gates is sad. We should feel sorry for him. I'm sad. He's, you know, he's got a little bit of tears. Clip two, Bill Gates is sad about misinformation about the vaccine. Let's roll tape.
COVID has also changed our relationship to healthcare. What does that mean for vaccination hesitancy in developing countries and developed nations?
Well, the misinformation about vaccines and associating certain people like myself or Fauci having malign intent with vaccines, that was most acute in the United States. But the pandemic, which you would have thought, wow, global health research to talking about health, being ready for the next pandemic. You know, when you've got millions of deaths, isn't that, you know, it's sad, it's tragic, but isn't at least there a benefit that health is on the agenda? Sadly, it's a topic nobody wants to talk about because it was painful. You know, it's over. Let's move on from that.
He's sad about the misinformation about vaccines, which he says is mostly in the United States. Yeah, there's a lot of it in Europe, people standing up. And the misinformation wasn't coming from vaccine skeptics. It was coming from Bill Gates, the World Health Organization, the Center for Disease Control, the Food and Drug Administration, the United States government, academia, the public health, your local doctor, any doctor you went to, especially pregnant women. Oh, this is perfectly safe. I recommend you get this COVID shot. I wonder how many pregnant women now, or women of even childbearing age, regret getting that shot. I mean, my God. One of the easiest decisions of my life was not getting the vaccine, and one of the most satisfying is not getting it. And as I mentioned, my mom didn't get it. I fought the nursing home to stop my 98-year-old aunt from getting it, 97 years old at the time, at least the booster. So it's nuts. And the idea is that we should be just happy we're talking about healthcare and spending more money now, because healthcare has been hijacked in public health by the agents of totalitarianism for control of society. I'm going to use RFK's famous line. He won't talk about climate because climate's been hijacked for totalitarian control of society by international organizations. Well, healthcare and public health has been hijacked for totalitarian control of society. So no, you don't want more money. You don't want to give these bastards more power to do anything. And tonight, and I'll have a full report of this, I'm going to the new preview of the film Climate, the Movie, and I'll be seeing Nobel Prize winning scientist Dr. John Clauser there, who's going to be introducing the movie, who's featured in the movie. This is by Martin Durkin and Tom Nelson. Martin Durkin is the filmmaker who did The Global Warming Swindle, which came out in 2007. He also did a film called Against Nature, a great film. But the CO2 Coalition and CFACT and Heartland is sponsoring this movie premiere in Washington, D.C. tonight. And they also did these series of videos in conjunction, promoting the movie. This isn't a clip of the movie. I don't have that yet. But this is a clip from the CO2 Coalition about CO2 and food abundance. Remember, everything I talked to you about yesterday, everything I was just talking about today about eating ants and how they give a sour, vinegary flavor to food, and how the farmers have to set aside in Europe 20% of their land for trees so that they can grow less crops and make the planet smile, or I should say the EU bureaucrats smile and the young children who have been indoctrinated from kindergarten smile that the farmers are in the fight against climate change. This is what they're fighting against. As CO2 has gone up, food abundance has greatly increased. Let's play clip 2.5, CO2, food and abundance.
The use of fossil fuels also began the process of liberating large amounts of CO2 that had been removed from the air during the creation of coal beds and oil and gas source rocks. Although our current levels are still not optimum for peak plant and crop growth, the additional CO2 in the air has provided a much-needed catalyst for global plant growth. It has made the Earth a lot greener. And the continued use of fossil fuels will further accelerate the fertilizing effect carbon dioxide supplies. Nearly all crops, including winter wheat, corn, potatoes, soybeans, sugarcane, and rice, have all experienced record-setting production levels since the 1850s. Thanks to more CO2, warmer temperatures, and the use of fossil fuel-derived nitrogen fertilizer. Forests are expanding, deserts shrinking. Growing seasons have been lengthened and crop production has skyrocketed. Current CO2 levels are near 424 ppm, but plants become even healthier, more productive and drought resistant at CO2 levels up to and exceeding 1,200 parts per million, three times higher than where we are now. The more natural plant food in the air, the better we can feed a hungry world. Net carbon zero is a dangerous goal. Instead of trying to remove carbon dioxide from the air, we should be adding more. Its sustaining effects will keep us healthier and well-fed.
Bravo. Very well done. Very well produced. Great science presentation. Great messaging. All of it is true. All of it is objective. You can look at the... There was an article about how chocolate production is going to be falling prey to the climate crisis. And I think James Taylor Hartland did the research just going back, I think, to the 1960s. It's gone up year over year to massive increases. The climate catastrophe typically only exists, ever only exists, in the predictions of the future based on climate models. When current reality fails to alarm, they make scary predictions, and that becomes the reality. You want to prevent the extinction of polar bears? You want to stop Florida from being underwater? Don't you want chocolate to be around? Don't you want beer to be around? It's what's interesting is they want us to eat bugs, and they want us to somehow think that's the solution. We're supposed to be happy eating bugs to prevent, you know, a price increase or, you know, of chocolate theoretically in the future, which isn't going to happen because the chocolate and cocoa crops, I should say, are booming. Anyway, silliness. I should have had this clip for our guest the last hour about crime, but this is a Jeep set on fire. This is funny. Jeep, it's not funny. But a Jeep is set on fire during a chaotic street takeover in Los Angeles. Now, I bring this up because of the EV mandates and because of the idea that banning gas-powered cars. Well, here's one way to ban your gas-powered cars. It's a gas-powered Jeep, city of Los Angeles, being nuked. Not only is it being banned eventually with these regulations, it's actually taken off the road now. There's one less gas-powered car, clip 3.
Check out this video going viral on social media that's now the subject of an LAPD investigation. This happened early Saturday morning at 63rd and Crenshaw. This Jeep soaked in gasoline and then set on fire as dozens of onlookers recorded it on their cell phones. That arson quickly followed by a street takeover that circled the burning Jeep. The crowd was already dispersing when LA police officers got there. No injuries reported, no arrests made.
I love that. No arrests made. And I doubt there'll be any. I doubt there'll even be an investigation. Who cares? It's funny. That's the exact car model I drive. 18-year-old Jeep, four-door Jeep Wrangler, unlimited, JK. And it's funny. I'm looking at the same color. They were just frying it out. Just an example of the crime out of control. But I just thought it was funny because, hey, there's one more gas-powered car off the road. No arrests made. Don't expect any arrests. If I owned the car, I'd probably just collect insurance and first of all, if I owned the car, I'd be like, well, I guess maybe he wanted to collect insurance. Why would you bring your car into Los Angeles anyway, your Jeep? Okay, last clip of the day. Epic TV is having a big documentary, and they're featuring truly wise and erudite individuals talking about solar and wind and the energy transition. It's easier to transition your gender than it is to your energy. Let's take a look at what Epic TV has in mind. I hear they have some great interviews lined up here. Clip 4.
Bill Gates has a whole agenda of pushing the fake lab-grown meat insects. He's got a business interest in this fake meat business. So being America's largest farmland owner, he'll have all sorts of leverage in order to fight that. But anyway, so they're going to control our energy, and that's the whole idea of the Green New Deal, is make energy scarce, make it just like meat, rare and expensive. So all these solar and wind mandates, if solar and wind truly were able to replace fossil fuels, if it was truly cheaper, you wouldn't need to mandate them and ban the other forms of energy. The same thing with the internal combustion engine. The internal combustion engine, if electric cars are so great, why do you have to ban their competition?
And if you thought that was interesting, well, hit that subscribe button and get more videos just like this.
And that's me. They didn't tell me that. I didn't know I was going that again. Epic TV featured me. Who is that guy? That was me. Okay. This Epic TV, go to check out Epic TV and watch the documentary. Again, they sat down with me for over an hour in my DC office. It should be a lot of fun. I have not seen it yet. I've just seen these teaser clips. Anyway, we are going to take a break. When we come back, Donna Jackson will be joining us, the National Policy National Center. She's going to be talking about the ramifications of the Black community with 10 million illegal immigrants coming on health, jobs, national security. We're going to go through a bunch of other issues. Donna Jackson will be right back. Will be with us right after this commercial. We'll be right back on Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT.
TNT's Jason Olborn.
What that sneaky World Health Organization, that private organization linked to the United Nations, is planning to do to take away yours and my medical sovereignty. Or pretending that they're not going to, of course, because it just so happens that they have got the ability to look into a crystal ball, see around corners, and tell us that there is yet another virus or disease or sickness coming for us, and the only way that we survive it is to do exactly what Tedros tells us to do, even though the man's not even a doctor. Can't even tell his own Ethiopian country on three separate occasions, goodness me, that they have had a cholera outbreak. Cholera characterized by acute watery diarrhea that, if not diagnosed correctly, can result in death. Well, on three occasions, Tedros's answer was, we didn't have good enough testing or testing available, so we didn't really know that it was cholera. That's the guy who's leading the world.
Weekends with Jason Olborn on today's News Talk, TNT.
In a democracy, the majority vote rules. But in most democracies, you can only vote for change every 3 or 4 years. To understand what people want, governments and political parties use focus groups. These focus groups can include as little as 20 people. Australia is a country of over 25 million people. Does making decisions based on 20 people sound fair to you? Have your say. Be heard in between elections. Download the For My Say app now. That is number 4, My Say.
Eggs. You can fry them, scramble them, poach them, boil them, or race them on a spoon. But uncooked eggs can be a risk for food poisoning. To be safe, avoid buying dirty or cracked eggs. Always wash your hands after handling eggs. And if you're concerned, pregnant, elderly, or have a poor immune system, make sure you cook eggs until the yolk starts to firm. Or look for new pasteurized eggs. For excellent eggs, handle them safely.
TNTRadio.live.
Online.
Streaming.
Be a part of the conversation.
I stream it all at work, and I stream it to my phone and listen to it wherever I go.
TNT.
Welcome back to Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. All right. Back by popular demand is Donna Jackson, the Project 21 Director of Membership Development for the National Center. Welcome back to the program Unleashed on TNT, Donna.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
We had a lot of good feedback. A lot of good feedback from your last segment, and a lot of great clips were made of it as well. So you have a tall order to match what you did last time. I don't want to put any pressure on you now.
All right.
Well, let's just start. We're in the middle of an election year right now. Joe Biden just gave his State of the Union address, and a lot of people are speculating that he was injected or took some pills to make himself a sort of a violent, angry old man. What are your thoughts on the State of the Union, both his delivery style and his messaging? Just give us your thoughts.
Well, you know, I'm not sure who he was talking to, but he sure wasn't talking to Black Americans who have supported him over the years. He didn't talk about illegal immigration. You know what? The left makes a lot out of the replacement theory, right? That somehow white conservatives are afraid that illegal immigrants are going to replace them. Guess who's afraid of that? Black Americans. That's the number one issue, that they're going to the booth because they see their vote getting watered down. They're the people that are being replaced by the illegal immigrants. They're the ones whose communities are being saturated, whose schools are being emptied out, whose after-school programs are being emptied out. Their communities are seeing the rise in crime from illegal immigrants. Let me tell you something. For every murder that you see in the spotlight, there's probably 20 times that amount happening in Black communities. illegal immigration is the number one thing, number one issue, making African Americans go to the booth, and we'll see a big pivotal shift this election cycle because of that. I mean, it's something that I've never seen before. They're revved up about this. All of a sudden you have in Chicago, Latinos and illegal immigrants are the largest minorities in that area.
Wow. Now, here's a question though. Could this explain why Donald Trump, according to mainstream media polling, is doing so well with Hispanics who are legally here now and can vote, and African Americans? And first of all, respond to that. Why is Donald Trump doing so well with minorities? I mean, better than any Republican in modern history that I'm aware of. And not just like slightly, but like multiples, double, triple of any previous Republican in polling by the mainstream media.
Okay, you know what? So whose jobs are they competing against? Ones that are historically held by African-American and African-American men in particular. Whose wages are being depressed because you have flooded the market with low-cost labor, African-Americans. You know, if you want to build a family, you need financial stability. But you can't do that if you're competing for a job that all of a sudden used to pay $15, now it's paying $7, or used to pay $20 and now it's paying $6. I mean, this is the whole point. And, you know, in Chicago, and this is amazing, in Chicago, the school board is considered a sanctuary city. You know what that means? That if an illegal immigrant goes to the Chicago public school system, they have to get preference in jobs. They can't be fired while they're trying to clear up their immigration status. They automatically got two seats on the school board without ever running for elections. Two seats. They have unprecedented power. They're actually putting people out of retirement communities to make room for illegal immigrants. They took some $53 million away from after-school programs for illegal immigrants. The people in that area are livid. And the other thing is this: when you look at somebody, you can't tell that they're legal. Or when you look at Latinos, and my mother-in-law fed into this category. You can't look at somebody and say, oh, they're illegal and they're not. No, they just look Hispanic. So however badly you treat an illegal immigrant, legal citizens are getting treated that badly now because the American public are mad at everybody. And so illegal people who fought and came into this country legally or maybe was born in this country are now getting treated and feeling the same anger towards them that illegal immigrants are getting, you know, treated today. And so a lot of people, I mean, it was Hispanics that were the first ones that actually said to me, these illegal immigrants shouldn't get preference because my family worked so hard to become legal citizens. And it's not fair to us, all the work and the money that we had to put in to get here legally, for them to just be able to get the same benefits and actually get treated better. And I think that that's the point. I mean, when you think of how difficult it's been for Black Americans to be seen as legal citizens, civil rights movement, all of these struggles that we've gone through for our citizenship. And now you have illegal immigrants that come over here and are being treated better. I mean, that made citizenship mean nothing. That made the civil rights movement look like nothing when you see that somebody can actually come over here, not work within the legal system, and they get preferential treatment where individuals that struggle for decades had to fight for it. I mean, how is that fair to anyone? It's not.
Well, are African-Americans organizing against this? Are they going to vote a certain way? I mean, are they going to send a message at the ballot box? What do you think is going to come of this? Again, you've laid it out, a very good case of why this is devastating to Black communities across America. They're just flooding us with illegal immigrants. What's the response going to be at the election box, election ballot, you know, you think?
I can't tell them. I can't tell you who the individuals they're going to vote for, but I can tell you the policies they're going to support. And they're right. Definitely going to support conservative policies, because this is the one that gives them the most economic protections. It gives their citizenship protection. It gives their communities protection. I can say that as long as we don't screw things up, at least 40% of the African-American vote is up for grabs. And that's unprecedented. Right now, Biden probably has about 60%. There's 20% for sure that are supporting conservative policies. There's 20 to 25% up for grabs, as long as we can show them that these are the policies that we plan to put forward that'll work for the communities. And I'm gonna tell you, they're desperate. I mean, a conservative could go into a minority community that right now, and it would be like a Beyonce concert. I mean, seriously. They're dying and starving for it. And I think that what conservatives need to realize is that they don't have to be scared of being called a racist or any of those kind of things. Let me tell you, you have a better chance of having a white liberal female call you a racist than a Black American. They want answers. They want somebody that's going to help. They want real policies. And they've seen what the last Trump administration did to help them. And, you know, it was probably the only good thing about having Biden in the White House this time is because African-Americans see that they've been lied to for decades by the left, that they didn't have to wait, that it wasn't a problem, that they didn't have to get put in the back of the bus, that really the problem is that it's not that the left wanted to give them solutions or do anything to help them. The left wanted to make sure that they created more chaos so that they can use them as a front for their own political gain and their enrichment. And so I think that you're going to see a big shift, because I'm going to tell you, it was the golden era for Black America during the Trump administration.
What about Biden's claim? And he said it on a Black radio show. I can't remember the name of the host off the top of my head, but he said, if you vote for Trump, you ain't Black. Are you still Black if you vote for Trump? I'll ask that seriously, because the President of the United States made the claim.
You know, this is the guy that ran as a senator on a segregationist ticket. I mean, they want us not to remember that. This is the guy who didn't want his kid to go to a race jungle. This is the guy that's called Black Americans super predators. You know, he thinks of, you know, he talks about how now that he was, you know, did all this work for Martin Luther King. Well, maybe the work he did was providing the rifle that got Martin Luther King shot, because I'm pretty sure it wasn't marching in any civil rights movement protest. You know, this guy has been saying racist things and really has been doing racist things since he got into politics, and it still hasn't changed. You know, one of the things that irritates me the most, he talks about how his administration is the most diverse, but he made sure, this is what really frustrates me. He made sure that he had the least competent individuals to put in positions so that everybody would think that the only reason why African-Americans or any diverse candidate can get a position is because we have to give them a carve out because they can't meet the standard. He bypasses all the qualified, educated, competent individuals and put in incompetent individuals because he needs you to buy the narrative that we're too stupid to be able to get an ID card. Okay. So it's racist if you have an election where you require an ID card, but not racist if you need an ID card to get in the federal building or to apply for government benefits, you know, or to get on an airplane. I mean, I think that most racist thing is the fact that if you think that Black Americans, it's racist to have an ID card to vote, then it should be racist that you require an ID card to get a bank account. I mean, what is that about?
Well, with the Biden administration, are you, as a woman, are you proud that the highest ranking Navy official is Admiral Rachel Levine, who's in the Biden administration? What's your comment on that? The highest ranking female Navy official.
Well, I mean, he has so many wars on minorities, it's hard to keep track of. But you know, let's start with that. You know, the woman of the year is a man. The best athlete is a man. The everything that's about a woman is a man. I mean, first of all, we have male sports. We don't have women's sports because women aren't winning. So we have male sports and male women's sports. You know, we have women, the model of the year is a man. You know, it's amazing that the vice president had to go to Planned Parenthood and say uterus because she can't say woman because nobody knows what one is, right? That's why she had to say uterus. Oh, the uterus person. Oh, the uterus person. Because they can't say woman because their base will be angry because you can't define what a woman is. So how do I feel about it? The Biden administration doesn't even know what a woman is. I mean, they got Biden, the male, and then the uterus is our vice president.
Well, are we far from the day when someone a white person could identify as Black or a Black person could identify as Asian? I mean, why not? What's your thought on that?
You know, I understand that I'm a Black face of white supremacy, so I'm not even Black, right? Because, you know, I don't understand that. I don't have the freedom to choose like you. You can go in, according to the Biden administration, and vote for the Greenpeace Party, the Democrat, Republican. You can vote for the Communist Party. Guess what I can vote for, according to them? What's only that? The Democratic Party. So you can be white and vote for anybody you want to. I'm Black. I can only vote for one person. How is this different than Jim Crow? I'm wondering, because that's the same thing. They used to have the ballot. They had open jars so people could see how everybody voted, and they knew who you were voting for by the color of the ballot. That's the same thing. If you're Black, they only give you a Democratic ballot. I'm pretty sure right now, if they could, they would just keep off the Republican off the ticket, because we're not supposed to be able to have the freedom to choose.
Well, of course, that's what they're trying to do.
How is that not slavery?
Of course, that's what they're trying to do with President Trump, keep him off the ballot. With President Trump, the more it seems as though he's been called racist. You put on MSNBC, Donald Trump's a racist, Donald Trump's a white supremacist. But yet his numbers keep going up to historic highs in the corporate media polling of minorities supporting Donald Trump, both Hispanic, African-Americans. Why do you think Donald Trump is getting stronger and stronger the more they call him a racist, the media?
Okay, first of all, every adjective that they use to describe him is what they used to call us first. You know, the angry Black woman, right? Donald Trump is the angry white guy. I mean, they just put the fine replace in their contents. You know, our Black Americans and our kids was, you know, angry and they were violent. And now, you know, they just put the fine replace MAGA and Republican white nationalists. They did this. They're doing the same thing to Donald Trump and his constituencies that they did to Black Americans forever. And Black Americans are going, see, I told you. Right now, the media, everything that the media is doing to vilify Trump and his supporters is what they did to Black women, Black people, and the communities for decades. All of the trumped up charges and the legal system that's against been against Trump is the same thing that African Americans have been saying for decades that were happening to them. You know that I have Black Americans come up to me and say, when the history book is written and people are reading it decades from now, they're going to think Obama was a white man and Trump is a Black man, because nobody will believe that a white man got treated this badly. So I'm going to tell you, Black men 100% relate to him because he can understand where they're coming from when they say, this is the way I was treated. This is the way the media depicted me in the papers. This is what happened, what they were saying about our community. That's why he resonates.
Well, all right. We're talking with Donna Jackson, Project 21, Director of Development, the National Center. We'll be right back. This is Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. We'll continue our discussion with Donna Jackson. Stay tuned.
As a combat wounded veteran, I know how hard it is to come home and build a meaningful life. When I was in Iraq, our vehicle was hit. A rocket-propelled grenade exploded right under my seat. Traumatic brain injury, a fractured pelvis, severe burns. They didn't think I was gonna make it. I had to learn to walk again and live with the scars, both visible and invisible.
DAV helps veterans like LaToya get the benefits they've earned. They help more than a million veterans every year in life-changing ways.
With DAV on my side, I was able to pursue my dreams. If my story can touch a heart, it can change a life. My victory is overcoming my wounds so I can help other veterans.
LaToya Lucas, may your victories inspire many more. Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
My character Shazam knows all about growing up in a family full of teenage superheroes. They're bold.
Where's everyone going?
To fight crime.
Okay.
Adventurous. Shazam! There's never a dull moment. And no matter what happens, they'll always have your back. All they need is a place to grow and be themselves. And the best part is, you don't have to be a superhero to adopt a teen. Learn more about adopting a teen from foster care. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward.
Taking no prisoners, this is Unleashed with Mark Morano on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Unleashed on TNT. I'm Mark Morano. All right, we're continuing with Donna Jackson of Project 21. You mentioned the replacement theory. Many people say that if you even talk about that, you're a racist by the fact that it doesn't exist. I just want to read you something. This is the LA Times, 2013. A climate activist is urged, Bill McKibben, is urging more illegal immigration so, quote, Latinos could replace white Americans' voting impact. He says, election after election, native-born citizens pull the lever for climate deniers. By contrast, 77% of Latino voters think climate change is happening. Here we have on the pages of the LA Times, urging more illegal immigration so that we could get people to vote out white climate deniers. Is that an example of replacement theory, or am I a racist for even asking you that question?
I mean, it's the truth is the truth. I mean, that's really what they want to do. But they really do. It's not white Americans they want to replace. It's really minorities that they feel like are getting out of hand or they're losing control over. You know, all of a sudden they thought they had this hold on Black Americans that would do anything they want. Because, you know, I say this all the time. It's two ways you build the government, war and the poor. And you need the poor to stay poor in order to build that. So you can't have these people that want to actually become prosperous. The majority of the time, you have Latino Americans that are native born here. When they become more prosperous, they actually become whiter and whiter. All of a sudden, they're not identifying as Latinos. They're identifying as white Americans. And the only thing, when I say that, I mean that when, as people become naturalized citizens and they love this country, they begin to see that the rights and the responsibilities that we have in this country is favorable to them, and they want to make sure that everybody has that same economic opportunity. That's why when you get older, you become more conservative, because you realize, wait a minute, you know, it's my duty to make sure that not only do I have an equal opportunity, but that other people have that. It's not saying that I give up taking care of my family, but you understand the basis of this country is free to everyone, and it should be that way. Liberal policies are all about making sure that you exclude people from as many freedoms as there is. It's about excluding people. Conservatism and conservative policies are making sure people are included in as many possibilities and freedoms as they're available. But it's our responsibility to make sure that happens. But what you have is individuals who want to dictate, you get this, you get this, you don't get this, and you don't get this. It's not about making sure that everybody can decide their own destinies. And so that's what this is all about, making sure you have people that are used to being controlled. When they have all of these illegal immigrants come in, they tell them what you can do, what you can't do, and they dictate what each freedom each person can have. When you are financially free, you become more equal, because you can decide what you'll do and what you don't. And that's what they don't want you to have control over. You don't feel like, when people say racism, they're not saying like, I don't like the way you feel about me personally. They're saying, I don't feel financially secure. That's what racism, when they say racism, that's what they mean. When you become more financially secure, you don't worry about those kinds of issues. So what they really want to do is make sure that they, the more they flood the market, the more people are pulled back into poverty, because all of a sudden there's not enough resources to go along. We have a shrinking middle class right now because all of these resources are taken away. You got hospitals overwhelmed, you got schools overwhelmed. And so all of a sudden, you have scarcity in homes. People can't buy the things they need to actually create wealth. And that's what you're seeing right now. So, of course, they want to replace everybody. They want to replace the middle class is what they want to do. And it's easy to do that if you have to, if the middle class has to give up all of their money to support all of these new people coming in that don't have a way to take care of themselves.
All right, well, let's talk about them, the crushing of the middle class. In 1972 presidential race, I think it was the Democrat nomination race, it was Humphrey versus McGovern. And one of the contentious issues was the guaranteed minimum income, or universal basic income, as they now call it. This is now that it failed at the time because everyone thought it was just so outlandish and it would affect human behavior. But now, fast forward, it's becoming sort of a global standard, and particularly in the United States, there's been communities that try to push this. What impact is this having? Crushing the middle class, crushing small mom-and-pop businesses. New York City just now regulations essentially that's going to crush these old pizzerias, about 100-plus pizzerias in New York City that use wood-fired ovens because of the climate and a pollutant impact. They're going to have to pay all this extra money. Small businesses being crushed, replaced with national chains. So the government and the people, World Economic Forum and others, want to push this idea that, don't worry, we will give you a guaranteed minimum income from the government. And of course, those people who receive it are going to be beholden to voting for the politicians that do it. What are your thoughts on the government giving people a guaranteed minimum income as opposed to letting them fail and or grow into a healthy middle class?
Well, you know, if the happiest people on earth were the people that had universal basic incomes, then why are we talking about systematic racism? I mean, African Americans are the group that has the largest amount of these government subsidies. And then, so why are we complaining? I mean, we should be whistling while we work, or walking up and down the street telling everybody that this is the happiest place on earth. The hoods, the ghettos should be the happiest place on earth, because everybody's getting, you know, food stamps and subsidies and all of that stuff. If people were happy because someone else gave them the bare minimum that you need to live on, then we should all be striving to be like the ghettos. We should be striving to go into low-income communities where everybody has universal basic incomes. Go and see how happy everybody is. They're not. They're mad at you because you can afford to go on a vacation when you want to. You have discretionary income to buy whatever you want to. You can invest in colleges. You can invest and send your kids to places. You can leave a will to your family to fight over. I mean, these are things that make no sense, because every time they advocate, you can't make everybody whole. And the other thing is, they're going to always give you a standard of living that's lower than the minimum wage that a part-time employee can live off of. There's no opportunity for upward mobility, advancement, promotions, nothing. And so the fact that people are promoting this, what they're trying to do is get you used to living without. That's the first thing. Create scarcity and make people think that it's normal for you to go without. Make people feel like it's normal for you not to have enough. Make it feel like food insecurity, energy insecurity is the way we're supposed to live. And I can tell you right now, when you live that way, you're always in survival mode. It's never a good feeling. So the fact that they're trying to force people into this situation, there's prisons that you commit a crime and they put fences around, and then there's open air prisons. That's the ones that they let you walk around with. You know, they call them smart cities, where you don't own anything, you don't have anything, but you're still a prisoner. It's still prison, whether they let you go home to your family or not. And that's what they're trying to push everybody into. If giving people universal basic incomes makes you happy, then there is no racism.
CNN recently had an article promoting the idea of carbon passports for travel issued to every citizen, where the government would monitor how much your train mileage and airline travel, and you could only travel if you were within your carbon passport limit. What are your thoughts on those kind of proposals that are making it to CNN now?
Well, again, open air prisons, where you get to go out in the yard for a couple of days a day, a couple of hours a day, so you can get some air and then come back. It's the same concept. They want these smart cities. They call them smart cities. I call them open air prisons. They don't want you to travel. They don't want you to go too far. Henry Ford built the Model T. I cannot stress that enough. Henry Ford built the Model T and made it available to everyone. That was the biggest attribute to freedom, because people could leave their communities. You built the suburbs with that. You built the vacations where people can have. You gave people greater job opportunities. You gave people the opportunity to be able to eat at different places and have different experiences. What they want to do is take that away and force people to stay within a 10-mile radius. How is that not different than prison? It isn't. That is what they want. People to be confined to their own little cubic spaces. And that's, if you want to drive people crazy, you want to see more violence, that's how you do it. Because people are always fighting for space. And they want to enjoy all the rest of the world for themselves, while we are confined to our little boxes in our open air prisons, and we're supposed to be happy about it.
All right, final question. You only have about 30 seconds. Easter eggs. They want to replace them with potatoes for the carbon footprint reduction. Should we be content with having Easter potatoes, or should we demand Easter eggs? What are your thoughts on that?
Eggs is a sign of life. Again, this is an attack on women. Don't make people think that, oh my God, an egg. We shouldn't be killing, aborting all of our kids and killing them. Maybe there is life. You know, this again, it's the attack on women. They don't want to have any reminder. Nobody out there crying about why didn't I give up my keys? Is this better being a teller than being at home raising a family? These people, you know, we have already one potato head. We don't need to have, you know, potato
head. All right, on that note. On that note, great line. Thank you so much, Donna Jackson, Project 21. This has been Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. Thanks for watching. See you next time.
Thanks for having me.